My name is Andrea Miller. I'm the CEO and founder of Your Tango, the digital leader in love and relationships. We are really excited to welcome you to the Algorithm Method, Love in the Age of Social Media. Thank you guys for coming. And of course, thanks for this amazing panel of phenomenal people. So we're going to spend the next hour talking about the incredible, as I like to say, inevitably complicated and often insidious impact of social media on our personal lives, and even more so, more to the point, our love lives. So we're going to answer questions like, given how much people reveal about themselves digitally, is there a new lower level of decency? Does social media cause more cheating? What are the dramatic changes that online dating is foisting upon society? So this will just to start to stimulate. So we want to cover a lot. So what we're going to do is we're going to show you a quick video that'll give a little context to tonight's discussion. Then we're going to come back. Each of the panelists are going to introduce themselves. And I've got about 1,000 questions that I'm ready to ask. And these guys have provided me with a whole bunch of data points that they're eager to cover. So we're going to let it rip. But as I said, I really want to make this interactive and fun. So I invite everybody to tweet to the hashtag, which is spelled algorithm with an E, A-L-G-O-R-I-T-H-E-M. And so we'll be watching Twitter, and then just, you know, let it rip with questions. It's a small enough group that you don't necessarily need a mic. If it's a little, you know, hard to hear, I'll repeat it. So with that, Tom, do you want to let it rip on the video?
Meet Alice. She switches on her computing machine and looks to see what her friends have been up to on Facebook, the electric friendship generator. She checks in to see what Timmy's been up to. Alice and Timmy have been going steady for 6 months. That's funny. Timmy changed his relationship status from in a relationship to single. Even more curious, he became friends with Donna Whitehouse at 2:07 a.m. Timmy just bungled rule number one of Facebook relationship etiquette. Don't change your relationship status without consulting the other person. What a dope. Alice decides there must be some sort of mistake. She sends him a note to see if it was a mistake. Alice waits and waits and waits. Alice is tired of waiting, so she decides to stick it to Timmy. She uploads and tags a few embarrassing photographs of Timmy. Alice just broke Facebook relationship etiquette rule number two. Don't post embarrassing photographs of other people.
What are you doing?
Nothing, hon. It's nothing.
Farmville? I thought you said this was an experiment, a one-time thing. $2,000 in farm cash? We were saving that money for Darren's space camp.
I just need three more cows, Dan. Just three more.
This is out of control. I'm logging you out.
No, my golden chicken. You can't.
Honey, look, I am here for you. And if you want to go to a real farm, I'll take you.
You just don't get it, Dan. What do you know? You don't even have any followers.
Darren, what happened to you? Oh, hold on, I have a DM. The same thing that happened to you, Mom.
Oh, Darren,
hold on, I have another one. I'm falling, I'm headed towards the ground now. I'm almost on the ground now.
I'm on the ground and I'm free. It's like I'm wireless. Hashtag terrible, terrible mother.
Oh, hold on, I have another one.
It's a pity about Jan and Brad. While Jennifer Aniston cannot seem to find a new love, Brad and Angelina's love only seems to flourish and multiply and multiply. If only she could erase the whole thing, but what she can do is execute the first and most important commandment of breaking up with your ex. Unfriend your ex on Facebook. While this may seem rigid or even downright draconian in its severity, it's a necessary evil.
Demi tweeted a photo with her eyes closed. Kutcher tweeted, I will forever cherish the time I spent with Demi.
Woods tweeted that he's feeling fit and ready to tee it up.
I don't know what I was thinking.
Well, that's what Democratic Congressman Anthony Weiner said today at a news conference in which he admitted tweeting an inappropriate photo to a woman over the internet.
The end. Who are you?
I'm Tweetsy, the responsible use of social media bird. And I'm here to tell you, you should take a break every once in a while. You need to set aside time for social media instead of checking in all day like a dodo. Take a quick trip outside. Maybe dip your beak in a cool glass of OJ and enjoy your friends. Remember, don't tweet the whole day away, and you'll keep the social media fatigue at bay.
Thanks, Tweetsy.
So we've got a lot to cover, so let's get into it. I'm going to start with Mike Lazarow on my left and let the panelists introduce themselves, and we'll let it rip. Mike?
I'm Mike Lazarow, CEO of Buddy Media, been married for 12 years. And I know nothing about this topic.
Are you done?
And that's the last thing I say on the panel, because I'm scared.
Don't worry, I only have about 17 questions with your name on it, so.
I'm Elizabeth Bernstein. I'm a columnist at the Wall Street Journal. I write about relationships, which is probably the most fun column at the Journal, at least for my most fun job I would want to do. But it's part of it. It's all kinds of relationships, but I cover a lot of issues around social media, so how Facebook really harms our real-time relationships, how texting turns us back into teenagers, how texting makes it okay to be late all the time, that kind of thing. And since we're disclosing personal information, I am divorced, which gives me a wealth of wealth of stuff to write about and a wealth of knowledge about relationships.
Do you find that kind of being the relationship columnist for Wall Street Journal is like the financial reporter for Playboy?
You should actually try dating and tell people you're the relationship columnist at the Wall Street Journal. That's a deal break. That's a second date that's never going to happen.
Tweet number two right there. Helen?
I'm Helen Fisher. I'm a biological anthropologist from Rutgers University. I've written 5 books on the evolution and future of human sexuality. I and my colleagues have put over 100 people into a brain scanner and studied the brain circuitry of romantic love and attachment. And I am currently the chief scientific advisor for Match.com and Chemistry.com.
And I'm just going to add really quickly to Helen's bio. If any of you guys like to watch TED Talks, definitely watch Helen's. It is amazing. It is going to make you think very differently about love.
Hi, I'm Tom Miller. I'm the coordinating video producer for YourTango.com, and I also write for the site. I am single, and as you can see, I look pretty good in a negligee.
Great. Okay. Thanks, everybody. So we'll start with questions. Just a couple of quick points. One, we'd love for everybody to give feedback. If anybody has downloaded the South by Southwest Go app, please give feedback. That would be great. And we're told that we have to get out of here at 7:30 sharp. So we'd love to take the party and questions and networking outside to the bar. And like I said, just for anybody who's just come in since we started, ask questions. Let's really make this a great interactive session. So Helen, the first question is for you. There was a survey by the American Academy of Matrimonial Lawyers that basically stated that 2/3 of divorce cases have used evidence from Facebook. So are Facebook and social media causing more cheating?
I don't find any evidence whatsoever any hard academic evidence that Facebook is causing more cheating. I've looked at adultery in 42 cultures around the world, and we know some of the brain architecture that is linked with cheating. We know certain genes in the dopamine system and vasopressin system that predispose you to cheating. The human brain has not changed in 200,000 years. It's not going to change because of a few years of Facebook. And if you're going to cheat, you're going to cheat. And if you can't find your old high school girlfriend, you're going to find somebody else. It might make it a little bit easier, but really, half a million years ago, we traveled in these little hunting and gathering bands on the grasslands of Africa. We met seasonally at water holes and knew about 500 people, and it was just as easy to cheat then as it is today.
And so, quick follow-up question on that. Since you do study the brain so carefully, would you say technology is changing the brain?
The technology is not going to change the brain. And, you know, the brain is very flexible. There's many brain regions. The cerebral cortex is extremely flexible, and you can be, some things are going to change. There's no question about it. In fact, we now know that if you play a lot of video games, brain regions associated with spatial skills actually grow. And if you don't use certain parts of the brain, those pathways are going to be less stable. But the basic brain architecture has not changed at all in 200,000 years. And the brain systems for romantic love and deep feelings of attachment and the sex drive are way below the cortex. They're not going to change. As a matter of fact, when you fall in love with somebody, parts of the cerebral cortex associated with decision-making actually shut down. So, you know, these basic brain systems linked with motivation, focus, energy, goal-oriented behavior are not going to change.
Okay. All right. Well, that's I think that's probably a bit of good news. So I have a question for anybody on the panel. So is it cheating if the interaction happened exclusively via digital media?
Well, I'll start to say.
Get in there. Yeah, I feel like if you're doing something with, and you specifically don't want your spouse to find out about it, might not be cheating, but it's not right.
Well, there's a lot of, when you go around the world, people define cheating very differently. In parts of Africa, they would regard it as cheating if you spent the evening in a secluded place with a married person and just had a beer. So the definition of cheating is going to depend on yourself, and we're going to have to, you know, what's cheating to one person is not necessarily cheating to the next, and that's part of your own human brain. It hasn't to do with social networks. There's one quote that I love about cheating, which is, it's not who you lie with, but who you lie to. And indeed, if you're lying to somebody, if you're ruining the dinner hour, if you're, not focusing on work, and you're destroying the relationships around you, it's something to be considered.
All right, Mike, this is for you. So when you and I were going back and forth, you'd mentioned some stats about how online behavior affects or mirrors offline behavior when it comes to relationships and attraction. Do you remember that?
Say that again. That was a lot.
Online behavior affects or mirrors offline behavior in terms of people, rating each other and, sort of playing hard to get a little bit.
We weren't supposed to share that part.
Oh, sorry. Prompting.
No, I mean, I think I'm a firm believer. I've been in the internet industry since 1996, and I've built like consumer stuff, and I've used like every consumer app. And I think those of us who've been in the business for a while realize that before Facebook, any app you built, which was like kind of a social app, like the dude pulled out his penis. Mm-hmm. Like, you couldn't build an app for years and years because it's like it brought out the most base like actions from primarily like men online. I'm sure when like you could talk about. And I think that the internet's made it just easier for so long to be anonymous and to kind of act out on behaviors that you would never do that like in. On a date, I don't think. I haven't dated in 12 years, but you'd never just like whip it out like you know. And I remember like early CompuServe, like you'd think this was your friend, and it was like some dude like who's. And so for those of us who've helped build the internet and kind of create this, we've just seen that like it takes you to the most base form, and it's not a separate. Like Facebook's a virtual. Representation of real life relationships. The relationships exist. What you do online is not just kind of virtual. It's kind of a representation of who you are. So I've never thought there's a huge difference between who you are online and offline. And I think those of us who live online, like I'm pretty public online, have a lot of people who I publish content to. The only way I can do that is if I am who I am. Like I don't think to myself like, "Oh, I gotta not do that or I gotta do this." And it sometimes gets me in trouble, not cheating wise, but just saying stupid stuff. Like just today, I think used the word breast and penis 5 times in Twitter, which I never do. But people are saying, "Hey, watch it, man." And if I were to have an affair, I would have it with Helen. I love you, Helen.
And I'm single. But you're married.
And I just want to, like, you're so smart on this. Like, I think we should all ask you questions.
I thought about that, believe me.
Thank you.
That's a real possibility.
No. I didn't know you were single, but awkward. Like, what's it like having an affair with the person who knows, like, everything about affairs? Like, well, it looks like that you're doing this because your cerebral cortex is, like, in a... And you're like, shut up. Sexy. Like, let me just, like... Okay, I'm never having an affair again. I'm going to kill myself.
Well, just to answer that, I tend to go out with narcissists, and they don't give a damn what I do for a living.
Well, you clearly don't go out with Jews because we're very guilty, and we would not fit the ass. They've turned me off.
It's too funny.
You want to follow me?
Okay, yeah, exactly. Comedy hour.
If you're flaky and you don't get back to people in person, well, there's a million different opportunities not to return texts and emails and phone calls, and it just goes on and on. If you're anxious, try dating and waiting for that text you want to have. That'll send you off the deep end. So I feel that this technology really, like, kind of pushes our buttons, basically.
Well, and you've also talked to you and I, and I think you've written about it, about how sometimes the personalities get warped and that people try to sculpt them. And so there's almost a, you know, you have, you know, your honest, authentic people like Mike and who talk about breasts and penises and stuff like that.
Not usually, today.
Oh, that was just today only. Okay, good to know. But then, you know, you've talked about how a lot of times people are, you know, it's like they almost are trying to create some phantom person, and you're not.
Yeah, they're not necessarily. I mean, there are people who are themselves online, but many people, especially people who don't live their lives online and are not sort of the people who create the internet, those people are trying to present the best persona they can. So who they are on Facebook may have nothing to do with who they are online. They could be this very outgoing, you know, sexy, funny person. You meet them in person, it's not who they are. I think it's easier, much easier, for many people to be outgoing and to present a certain persona that they create. Basically.
Let me actually stay on this for a second. Helen, I don't know if you've studied that specifically in, you know, in your online date, you know, wearing your online dating hat, but it seems like one of the big problems I hear all the time from others who are dating online is the person they thought they were going on a date with doesn't match who they're going on a date with. You know, their photos aren't the same, how they describe themselves aren't the same, they're, you know, not nearly as handsome as Mike Lazzaro. So is that something that you see?
At Match.com, I mean, that's one of the things they study, and certainly we know we can watch people lie. I've watched 40,000 people lie to me. I think they're lying to themselves. But basically, men tend to lie about their height and how much money they make, and women tend to lie about their age and their weight. And you know, courtship is not about honesty. Courtship is about winning. And, you know, I mean, you can be lying when you're in a bar, too. I mean, you walk in and you talk to somebody, they're very nice, and you don't know that they're married, or you don't know that they're here for 2 days, or et cetera. So lying is lying. You're going to find it online, and you're going to find it offline. The really important thing about being online dating, it's not online dating, it's online introducing. The bottom line is you've got to get offline and meet the person, and meet the person in real time. Then you go into that coffee house or that bar with exactly the same brain that we had, you know, 200,000 years ago, and you court just exactly the way we always have. We've got this big idea that online dating is something so totally new. It's online introducing. That is new. But the dating experience is exactly the same. In fact, it's a little bit less artificial than walking into a bar. Like, you know, I mean, 200,000 years ago, you might not know that cute boy on the other side of the waterhole, but his mother knows your aunt. You know what he's going to be when he grows up. You know a great deal about this person. And so, you know, when you go offline and meet somebody, knowing some things about that person is not artificial. And it can be extremely helpful in weeding people out. So, but the only true algorithm is the human brain. The best we can do is help you kiss fewer frogs.
That's a good goal. Helen, I'm going to stay on you for another minute. I want to say Anthony Weiner, Tiger Woods, Brett Favre. I mean, what are they thinking in terms of sharing so much personal information? You know, when you know that in a blink of an eye, your information can get transmitted to millions of people, I mean, are they just dumb? Why do they do this?
Can I grab this before Helen does? I think guys like Tiger, Favre, and Weiner do it because one out of 20 times it actually works.
That's a good point. That's a really good point. And when you win big.
Yeah.
I mean, you may send your DNA into tomorrow, and that's winning big time.
Yeah.
But why do they share it all? I mean, because, I mean, look at these people have lost entire careers over
right.
it. I mean, it's something that, you know. First of all, the human animal has a tremendous desire to share. Privacy is a relatively new human concept. For millions of years, everybody knew everything about everybody. So we do have this drive to share our lives. And we, I think thinking long-term and the consequences is relatively new in the human brain. And, of course, with real impulsivity, we go off and do things in order to share, in order to win, in order to get that DNA into tomorrow without thinking way down the line. But in terms of these particular people, they also have another issue, which is they're all very high testosterone men. And high testosterone, you inject testosterone, and your thinking becomes more focused on the here and now, less contextual, less long-term, and so they're high, and of course with high testosterone, they're also very high sex drive, focusing only on the here and now, and also a tendency towards narcissism, and then of course they've got so many people around them who are yes men, who are, you know, sycophants of one type or another, and they get away with it, and in fact a lot of these people are actually shocked when they get caught. Why me? Why pick on me? Because they've lived in this bubble. So I think it's a whole combination of things.
God, is anybody thinking Bill Clinton, Arnold Schwarzenegger, DSK? I mean, it's like, oh, my God, you just explained
it all. You don't catch the women because they think more contextually. But they're doing something else. They're doing that sexting, which is a different issue.
Oh, and we're going to get to sexting. But I want to stay on celebs for one more second. Tom, this is for you. So you know, then there's people like Demi and Ashton and these celebrities who are broadcasting themselves, you know, not in inappropriate ways, but certainly in really personal ways. I mean, what is your take on why that's happening?
Yeah, last year I saw a Mark Cuban speak, and he said that current generations no longer have a right to privacy, they have a right to publicity. You know, and kind of at the top of that pyramid is our celebrities, and they, right or wrong, they think that, strangely, we have a right to know what's going on with them, so they can stay in the public eye, you know. And so we keep on seeing their movies, you know. We keep on buying their fragrances. That if they go away from Twitter, despite their you know, lifestyle problems, that we're going to forget about them pretty quickly, just because everything moves so quickly.
Yeah. So it's they're their own PR machines. It's,
yeah.
It seems like what it is. So I want to talk about relationship suffering in the age of social media. I'm wondering, you know, my observation is that there's a good chance that people are getting lonelier, they're having a tougher time succeeding in their relationships. Your Tango, in fact, did a study recently with about 100 psychotherapists and counselors asking the questions about why do couples fight, why do they go to counselors, and, you know, I've always spouted off that the top two reasons for discord in a marriage were sex and money, so I was really surprised to see the results, which said, no, the top two reasons for discord are communication and not feeling valued or important in a relationship. I mean, it's like, how basic does it get? And so it's supremely ironic in this age of hyper-communication that, you know, that still is the problem that's causing, is so problematic in all these relationships. So what I wanted to essentially do is ask Elizabeth, you've written a lot about false intimacy, you know, vis-a-vis texts, and, you know, just, you know, talk a little bit about that, because I feel like that's a real, you know, getting into the problems in relationships vis-a-vis social media is a real specialty of yours.
I think where I see it, which is I spend a lot of time watching how people behave, but also I get a lot of feedback from readers. So I hear a lot, I get a lot of emails from them. One of the biggest problems I see are people are actually jealous of the phone. So they're jealous of their loved ones' phones, and they're, you know, they go home to dinner and the wife or the husband's on the phone, on the BlackBerry, working away. I was mentioned at breakfast, I was at Disney World with my family recently, and there was a table with three little kids and two parents, and every single one of them was looking at a screen. It was dinner, and the kids, all three kids, had headphones on. And so how is that family? Like, it's expensive to go to Disney World, so they're, you know, these parents are paying something to get there, but how are they connecting with their children unless they were texting each other? Even then, that's problematic. But so that's a big one. I think people are jealous of the actual device. Another one is that they're jealous of who you are contacting on that device. And then I think, as I mentioned before, I think we sort of revert back to 14-year-olds on these. So I was at dinner. I wrote a whole column about this. I was waiting for a friend of mine, one of my best friends, and at dinner one night, and she's texting me, "I'm sorry, I'm going to be late." And I was just glad to, like, sort of be at the restaurant. I was sitting at the bar, have a glass of wine. I was reading a New Yorker. I was trying not to look at my BlackBerry. And she kept pinging me, "I'm sorry, I'm late. I'm sorry, I'm late." She was 2 hours late. She kept that up for 2 hours. And I didn't even notice the amount of time that went by until the bartender said, like, "Hey, did you want to order? Your friend's not here." And she came in. She said, "I'm so sorry." She's someone who's a little late all the time. But I realized texting makes it so easy. Before, if you were 2 hours late, the person you were waiting for would be pretty sure that you were in a horrible accident or you had been stood up. And when I wrote that article, I asked her permission, and she said yes and then was not that thrilled when she saw the article afterwards, because people reamed her online and said, "Look, this is, what is this behavior?" And they reamed me as well. They said, "What is wrong with you that you waited for 2 hours?" Which is another good point, but it was a good wine I was drinking. But anyway, I think there's just a lot of problems. I wrote an article about how Facebook ruins our relationships when I realized, like, I cannot get my sister, she's a doctor, cannot get her on the phone. She's too busy. But then I get on Facebook and she's writing about how her dog ate an ant farm. Like, how is this, like, how does she have time to do that? And so, like, that was my easiest column to write because I was so mad, like, can't get her on the phone. So, and I realized, like, we are wasting time. Like, I think a lot of us get a lot from Facebook, but we're wasting time. And what is I see a lot of harm to the people we love the most. That's
okay. So let me, I just want to disagree with something. And what I want to disagree with is, like, you are, and it's ironic because you're the relationship writer for the Wall Street Journal, so I got to be really careful.
Right.
You're divorced? How many times? Once?
Just once.
Okay.
Once so far.
I'm
once,
only
just so far.
Twice divorced. Been married for 12 years since, so that's worth something, right? You know, the way you put that of, like, you know, I can't reach her on the phone, but she's on Facebook, you know, writing about the ant farm. Now, you trying to reach her is about you.
Well, I can't connect with her.
I know, you can't. But, like, you trying to reach her is, like, trying to get her to stop what she is doing. Like, she's a doctor, like, really busy. And her sharing about her ant farm is for her, okay? So she's sharing about her ant farm because it does something wonderful for her soul and fills up her cup, right? That fills her. Maybe talking to you, like, she likes, but it doesn't do as much.
I get it. Okay? Agree.
So, like, part of the relationships, and it's ironic saying this to, like, the relationship writer for the Wall Street Journal, is, like, it's not all about you, and some of the, and I'm not saying you, but, like, people say it to me all the time, like, I have 1,000 emails I haven't gotten back to. Okay, like, I get too much email. Email's dead to me. But I tweet during the day, and I'm on Facebook. And people are like, "Well, why do you do that if you can't get back to my email?" Well, getting back to your email is doing your work, whereas when I'm tweeting, when I'm walking down the street or going to the bathroom or waiting for someone, like, that's my time. Like, I enjoy it. Like, I'm a writer, and I actually am a journalist. So I think if we start to look at kind of what we bring to relationships and what we contribute, positive and negative, and our expectations. Like, I think there's a lot of expectations that people have that are now questioned because of all this technology. Like, I expect you to get back to me right away, you know, because of the technology, but that's your expectations that I'm going to get back to you, but I don't want to do your work. I have to do my work. Now I'm going to shut up for a while.
Hey, Mike, do me a huge favor and don't return any of my calls when you're sitting down in the bathroom.
I may tweet at you.
Can I just make a social comment about, I think there's a really good point, but also to Elizabeth. You know, in anthropology, there's rules of what good behavior is, and there's taboos, things that you don't do, not because it's any sort of social rule, but because it's a taboo. And I think with the beginning of Facebook and tweeting and online dating, we haven't really built the taboos yet. And I think that what you're struggling with, you know, is the fact that she's 2 hours late because there's no taboo yet about the fact that this is goddamn rude, you know. And the same thing that Mike was just saying, this is, you know, we haven't yet developed what these really rules are. For example, in New York City, there's a taboo against walking into somebody's home and lighting up a cigarette. There's no rule against it. It's a taboo. And I think that with this enormous technological change, we are going to create a host of taboos such that you don't struggle with somebody 2 hours late and you know, Mike's personal time.
We've
and
had mobile phones for, like, 15 years?
So, yeah.
I mean, I think it's just a habit. And I was watching I Am Trying to Break Your Heart, David Frick, a writer from Rolling Stone, was saying that's a movie that's 10 years old. In the movie, he says, I don't care if you're going to come in a minute or two. I don't care. Just show up.
Well, we're going to have to find out how long it takes to make it taboo. But
the communication problems that you're describing, you know, in the relationship study, that's where it's at. People don't say, don't come late anymore.
Yeah, or people who are late will just chronically be late. And that.
Exactly. They wouldn't be chronically late if the person walked away and said, I'm not coming here to sit here at the bar and wait for you.
Which is the same answer as, you know, 20 years ago, 40 years ago. Yeah. It's just really, if people will, they would have done that then, you know, so.
Yes. I want to just say one quick thing to both Elizabeth and Mike. I mean, what I've observed and Elizabeth and I have talked about this is this idea of, you know, you can spend time maybe talking about the ant farm, et cetera, but at the same time, you know, you may be responding to somebody that you just, you know, haven't or a whole bunch of people, frankly, don't have that strong of a bond with on Facebook and monkeying around, and it's taking real time away. You know, we're all obviously busy professionals. You know, that does tend to take real time away from real relationships, which was why we parodied it in that clip. It's called "Social Media Addiction: Stop Using Social Media, Mom." So Mike, your point is a great one, and people are using social media or not using it in ways that serve themselves. But it strikes me that it is there is a real impact in real relationships. Yeah. Helen, I just want to turn it over to you because my sense is chances are that in using social media, a lot of time it truly is an addiction. And, you know, I'm wondering if that's partly what's happening, is that people do, you know, they chronically use their BlackBerries, iPhones, you know, whether they're playing, you know, Angry Birds or whatever it is, it's like they're, you know, they're addicted to this. Mm-hmm. And that does, again, it takes real time away from the real people in their lives, and it has a consequence.
What's interesting about is, of course, the word addiction. Now, going back 200,000 years ago to a hunting and gathering societies, everybody would be chatting with all of these people in the social group just the way they're chatting on the Internet now. So is it an addiction that we need this constant need to stay in touch with each other? The problem, I think, is that in the past we had local community, and so we were really connecting absolutely regularly with all the people around us in a style that seemed quite natural, whereas now we're really losing local community, and we are creating new kinds of communities which are on the Internet and not necessarily local communities. I think I was thinking last night that this is sort of the end of tribalism. that the local community is going out of style. We're building all these new connections, and of course the internet is building up some of your connections quite regularly. So this natural desire to stay in touch, I think, is human. I wouldn't call that an addiction. The problem is we're doing it in a way that looks like it's an addiction because you're not talking to the person next to you.
Right, right. All right, Helen, I'm going to stand you for a minute. Somebody mentioned the word sext. We know that's a commonly used term. I actually did look it up, and Webster defines it as the fourth of the canonical hours, and that doesn't include the action form of the verb sexting. Nevertheless, we've all heard about it. Many teens and savvy 20 and 30-somethings have done it. Probably many people in this room have done it. Some might even be doing it right now. And then, of course, to say nothing of sports figures and politicians. But what's up with the sexy photos and the spicy messages?
Well, first of all, I'm a lot older than everybody here, and we were certainly doing this in the 1960s, but we took a photograph of ourselves and we gave it to our boyfriend. We didn't put on an internet where he can, you know, spread it out like sperm to everybody he knows. So that's the difference. I think the drive to actually show pictures of yourself. I mean, let's not forget that this brain system for romantic love is associated with wanting. It's one of the most powerful brain systems on earth. People pine for love, they live for love, they kill for love, and they die for love. And as they're sending their sexy pictures, they're trying to win life's greatest prize, which is a mating partner. I don't think the sexting in itself is what's at all unusual. People want to win, and they want to win big. But the problem is that they are doing it in a social form that itself can be a disaster for them, and they're not thinking ahead because we don't tend to think long term.
Who here has sex before? Not with me, but with... Come on, like you're lying.
S-E-X-T.
Okay, S-E-X-T. Sext. You guys are liars. Everyone else. Come on.
You have to do it without your head.
Who here...
Yes.
Who here has ever looked at porn online? Everyone else who had... You're a liar. No, you didn't raise your hand. Have you really never looked at porn online?
All right.
Really? Okay, let's try this again.
No, no
answers.
Who here has never looked at porn online? Really? Go to PornTube on the thing. There's got to be a first for everyone, right? We might as well do it all together.
But you know what, Mike? I think this woman in the first
even
row...
if you like misspell Facebook when you go to like if you do like Facebook without an O. You go to, like, ridiculous stuff that I can't stop watching.
I actually think this woman in the first row said something really important about this. She said, you know, don't include your head. Yeah. And in fact, I think this is the direction that we're going to go. We will continue to do this sexting. That's natural to the human brain. But we're going to figure out how to be smart about it. And the dumb ones, and you asked whether Wiener was dumb. He's got to be dumb to some extent, you know, to have those kind of pictures. And so we watch these idiots make their big mistakes. We learn from them, and we do something like that.
But at least it was like...
Yeah, no identifiable moles. Tweet that to somebody.
At least it was like truth in advertising for him.
Right. So related question for anybody on the panel. With all these high-profile indiscretions, is there a lower bar for how we conduct ourselves? I mean, so Helen, you just said maybe we're just going to get smarter and we'll cut the heads off. But, I mean, or are we just going to get desensitized and, you know, we don't care? I mean, it happens on TV. You know, you didn't see bare breasts 40 years ago. You see it now. I mean, you know, what you talk about, I mean, even on ABC, I think Desperate Housewives talks about vibrators fairly regularly.
But the key is you're not seeing your own. Like, you're not seeing your own bare breasts on TV. So I think that, for me at least, but I...
Wait, he has a question, and he dressed for the occasion. Okay, you have to stand up and introduce yourself. Family. Okay, now strip.
Did someone call the police?
Molecular.
And my question is, what about robot porn? Is there? And what do you have to say about that?
I love it.
Yeah. Are we talking robot people porn? With robots or robots with robots?
I'm sorry?
People with robots or robots with robots?
Polyrobots? Polygamy?
R-R-P-N-R.
Should we dial up robot porn tube?
Yeah, Mike, can you dial that up for us?
I've you know, the trans pooties. You've seen that site, right? Not the Transformers, but the trans pooties. No, no one else has visited that site. Oh my God, I'm nervous. See, I mean, I like the Okay, so let's just be honest here. Can we keep everyone keep their Twitter machines off?
Sure.
We can all agree on that.
Yeah, sure. Off the this is off the record for the next.
This is off the record.
Even though it's being podcasted.
Off the record. Okay. If it gets out, I'm really in trouble because I work with my wife. It's going to be very expensive for both of us. But I think cultural, your cultural background drives a lot of how you act. So I have a lot of guilt. I grew up in a very Jewish household, and the thought of getting caught doing anything, I run my life with, oh my God, if I do that and get caught, I am homeless. And I think it's a lot of this is, clearly Tiger Woods is having an affair, but how surprising is that? Not very. The guy's incredible at golf. He's good looking. He's got a ton of money. It's surprising he got married, right? It's not surprising he had affairs. And so I think just the background, your cultural background, if I'm caught having a beer at night with a woman, that's kind of cheating, and it's cheating in Africa. So either the Goldsteins moved to Africa, or it's a cultural thing, right? And I just think that that's a huge part. And people who kind of grew up in households that maybe were more lenient and more sexually charged, they grow up and what their norm is kind of they're comfortable with, and they have open marriages and whatever. And none of it's good or bad. It's just how do you want to live your life? And I know, given I've been married for 12 years, we have 3 great kids, and we have a great company, and we work together, that the cost of, sending dick pictures out, and Jews don't send dick pictures, let me just tell you, but the cost to me of sending that out, is so enormous. I mean, so enormous, that I would it would never cross my mind, and there's no body part I have that I would ever send to anyone. I don't do it. It sounds stupid, but I know I would never, it's not good or bad. No, I don't. Well, for me, I don't want to place a judgment on whether it's good or bad. I don't want to do it. And I don't want to do it because of my background. But if people want to do it, great. It's a free society. Do whatever you want. And just know that there are consequences potentially for you doing it. But I think that's a disease. I think Tiger, Bill Clinton.
Was.
But I disagree because, Anthony Weiner getting caught is expensive for Anthony Weiner. Are you married?
No.
Okay, I am. I'm. Fine, but the point is that their costs, you care more about the cost to you. If you get caught and you're married and your marriage is over and your life as you know it is over, that is more important to you than Anthony Weiner getting caught.
Anthony Weiner's career is over.
Who cares? That doesn't affect you. You're now homeless because you don't have your wife.
I'm saying, but he wouldn't have
mattered
if he was married or not.
But I'm saying that his you getting caught is more important to you and than Anthony Weiner getting caught. That's my only point.
But I think that you had a very good point, which is that is the consequence the only reason you're not doing this, right? Are you not doing it because you love your wife? Because I think
it's a cultural background. I don't do it because I have no interest.
You have a lot of guilt.
No, I have no interest to do it.
Thank you.
You're right. I know nothing about this topic, which is true. So you're right. I agree with you. It's because how I grew up. Like, it's not to me. Like, I feel like it's just not in me. Like, it's just my composition. Like, but everyone has their, like, if it isn't, if someone else thinks that they would like to do it and it adds, it makes their life better and they want it, they have like a urge to do it. Like,
hey guys, we're going to move on from this. Oh, sorry. One last point. Well, that's the new taboos will be coming.
Right.
Sorry.
So you should just have Dr. Fisher explain how dopamine levels probably contribute to whether people do that or not.
Oh, right. Yeah. Well, the dopamine, all the testosterone.
200,000 years ago.
Hey, hang on one second.
Even
second.
Now.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Is there a question or just...
No, that was just being asked.
Oh, okay, yeah, no,
it's... Well, maybe there's a reason why certain people will send a body shot of themselves because they're after something at that moment.
Right. No, it's a fair point.
Beer helps, too.
Well, what he's referring to is the fact that I think we've evolved three distinctly different brain systems for mating and reproduction. One is the sex drive, second one is feelings of romantic love, and the third is the brain circuitry for feelings of deep attachment. And they can come in any kind of combinations, but there's all kinds of people who are very deeply attached to somebody even if they hate them, and stay in relationships that are either good or bad for them because of this brain system. So...
All right, so I'm going to just switch gears a little bit, kind of going back to a little bit of what we were talking about in terms of behavior and misbehavior as a result of social media. One of another study that Your Tango did recently, we found that 93% of the people say it's inappropriate to break up via text or tweeting, which was encouraging. At the same time, Elizabeth, you've shared some astonishing tweets and some of the passive-aggressive behavior, so I just thought you might want to talk a little bit more about, the email, the text that keeps saying I'm late. So
people do write me and tell me all sorts of things, and one of them is they can't get over the text they get. So the text that says, "Hey, the wedding's off," you know, when you're the bride. One that shocked me the most was, "Your cousin died." The text that, from parents saying, "I won't be there for Thanksgiving." And so I think that there's something going on. Number of things, maybe. One is that we're just not thinking of the impact. Like, we now sort of think of this as like an extension just of our communication, our brain almost. So, like, we're just we want the information out there immediately, and you know, it's just sort of a piece of us. But also, we're hiding behind it too. Yeah. So I'm not coming for Thanksgiving, and you're the parents, and your daughter's been waiting to show you her new home. That was the case. She was really upset. This was something. This was a friend of mine actually, and so you know, I think that it's very easy to hide behind this. I'm breaking up with you. I hate you. I love you is inappropriate. I think when it's the first time over, you know, over something that's not face to face. So that there's a lot of them. And then I see a lot of. I wrote an article a little bit ago on passive aggressive texting. And I was at a dinner party, and I was trolling for story ideas. And I said, "Come on, people, like, you know, give me some story ideas." And they were a little younger than I am, and they said, "Well, you know, do the blank text." And I said, "Well, what's a blank text?" "Oh, you're really mad at somebody, and you're either already arguing with them on text, or you want to argue with them, you want to start an argument, so you just send them a blank text, and they're so discombobulated, they will text you right back. Try it. They will. Right now, we should do a little experiment." So we did at the table. We all tried it, and we all got texts back. And some people are, I mean, it was like somebody was, "This is my ex-girlfriend. I haven't spoken to her in a year." The text will come right back. And so that was something that people wrote me even after that article and said, "You're right. I've done this." The nice thing to do, other people have written and said, turned it around and said, "Now I use a blank text just to say hi. I don't have anything to say during the day, but I want to let somebody know that I am thinking about them, so I'm going to blank text them, and then my boyfriend will blank text me back." So I think if we can be more conscious about the way we use this and just sort of think about what we're doing, it's an amazing, there are amazing tools we have at our fingertips, but
I'm gonna key off that and send it over to Tom. Something that your Tango has done now for a couple of years in a row is we anointed February 13th as National Breakup with Your Ex Day, and we're sort of using social media as a positive force to help us in our, you know, online and offline lives. So Tom, why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, in our office, 2.5 years ago, we did a show of hands. Hey, who's still Facebook friends with their ex? You know, who still has their ex's phone number and periodically texts them? Who still follows their ex on Twitter? And so by, you know, show of hands in our office, we're like, "Oh, Jesus, this is a huge problem." So we commissioned a study, and we found that an awful lot of people, like, really need to do a better job of breaking ties with their ex.
54% of the people said they needed to break up with their ex.
Yeah, 54% of people said.
And that included 37% of married couples.
Yeah. And from there, we noticed that somewhere in the neighborhood of 70% of the people we surveyed at that time were still Facebook friends with their ex, including, I think, at least 50% of the married couples. And so it was just from there, it built and built. And so we created this February 13th holiday in order to, you know, you break up with your ex, February 14th, you're ready for some Valentine's Day love. That, you know, it's such a push and pull society that, you know, 20 years ago, you just didn't return someone's calls, and you know that was it. Now you've got to actually go out of your way to make sure that your split's done. And so, you know, step one, nuclear option, defriend them. You know, step two, maybe write the number down in the back of an address book that you'll probably never see again. You know, delete that number. That otherwise, you know, you're going to be in a really weird moment. You're going to look up some photos of them, and you're going to feel awful about yourself, and that sucks if you're in a new relationship, and it sucks even more if you're looking for a new relationship and can't stop thinking about this person.
But how can you blank text them if you've deleted them?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. How can I send them a picture with all the weight I've lost if I don't have their phone number?
With all my head, I'm just chest down.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. 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 Exactly. Breaking up is hard to do. Yeah. I mean, I studied the brain, and you know, we've put 70 people who've just been rejected in love into a brain scanner, and we found a lot of activity in brain regions linked with intense feelings of romantic love, still feelings of deep attachment, and three brain regions linked with craving and obsession and addiction, and one brain system linked with physical pain and the distress of physical pain. So it's hard to walk out, and, you know, I'm not surprised that people sort of cling to these. And not only are you in a personal problem, but you got whole social context that you need to break, and, you know, breaking up is hard to do.
So they use Facebook to research me, and possibly Google stalk me, I don't know.
Interesting.
And so it's like there's this reluctance to get on, you know, mm-hmm. get offline.
Yeah.
And then with that, once they friended you, and once you go on maybe 1 or 2 days, and maybe it doesn't work out or something like that, the social etiquette seems to be that unfriending people has as a negative stigma
right.
to it, right? So people just don't unfriend you. So you kind of accumulate these people that, you know, you're like, and the thing is that it's kind of exactly the opposite of what you guys are saying, that because the social media and the use of texting and that kind of stuff make it easy to be kind of nasty to people and selfish, you know, like, you know, 2 hours and all that kind of stuff. I've gotten, like, email breakup with bulleted lists and, you know, that, all that kind of stuff. And so it's like, it's all at once makes people worse and more selfish and more cowardice. And make more people, show people more, like the whole, you know, upholding the social norm of being nice. It's, I don't know how to balance it. Why are they so nice and so nasty yet?
At the same time.
Yeah. Just get married. And then you don't have to deal with, like, I'm so happy. Like, I don't have to deal with that stuff. Like, I'm serious. Like, I think part of, like, marriage was always, like, to bring civility to, like, society. It was, like, a construct that was thrown into, like, almost by, like, the government to, like, keep the society at large. And I think now it's, like, you know, in many ways, you either have to, like, know what you want and be, like, keep noise out of your life. Like, if people did that shit to me and I was dating, I'd be like, I'm never talking to you again. Like, you are the worst person ever.
You could be a dating coach, Mike.
You know, it's interesting.
It works for me on Ashley Madison.
Tough love, Lazaro.
Oh, I did not say that out loud.
Touché.
Did I? Oh, shit. Now I am in trouble. Whoever said I wasn't in trouble at home.
Ashley Madison, attorney here.
Oh,
I
just want to say that, you know, MASH.com and I just finished a national study of singles in America, and not based on the MASH.com population, but based on the U.S. Census. So we had the right number of gays and straights in every age and every region in the country, et cetera, et cetera. One of the questions we asked was, you know, why are you going online? What are you looking for? And only 3% of men and 2% of women said that they just wanted to date a lot of people. So a huge percentage of men and women really are on those two dating sites anyway, or on dating sites, profoundly looking for what Mike has found. So I don't think we're playing fast and loose with these things. We're actually are seriously using this system to try and find love.
Yeah, well, that's what you say. It's the ultimate prize.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think any of us would probably disagree. Did you have one quick question?
Well, there's certainly that's the biggest problem with online dating. The biggest plus is that at any age you can go back online and find people. I mean, I'm too old to stand in a bar and wait for the perfect boy to come along. I did not know it. So that's its great advantage. Its great disadvantage is what they call cognitive overload, the mere fact that, and every dating site actually knows this, the more opportunities you have, the less likely you are to choose any of them. And so the one thing that I say, if you're going to go on to Match.com or any other dating service, after you've met 9 people, and there's reasons I chose that number, pick one of them to get to know better. Because the psychological data is that the more you get to know somebody, the more you like them, and the more likely you are to think that they are like you. And one of the problems with dating, online or offline, is that when you know very little about somebody, you overweight those few things that you know. And if it's a slightly negative thing, you go way down the line, oh, he's not holding his fork right now, he's not going to be any good with the kids, you know. You know, stop thinking. Just pick up on what's going on now and just try and keep on. So try to say yes. The one thing that you said was so fascinating about fantasy, there's a lot of academic studies trying to figure out what makes a happy marriage. And what they've basically found is that what makes happiness in one couple is not necessarily happiness in the next couple. And the one thing that they have found that seems to make a happy relationship can be summed up in two words: positive illusions. If you continue to think in your fantasy world that this person is the perfect person for you, even if it's 40 years later, they're 200 pounds overweight, they haven't said anything intelligent in 20 months, but if you continue to think that this is the cat's meow, you will have a happy relationship.
Everything he does
your
is
own
art.
Reality.
Okay, guys, thank you so much.
Can I just a couple quick things? So give feedback on the South by Southwest feedback app. The app at the bottom of our page. And then we're going to go outside and mingle for a little bit. So would love for you guys to join us. Yeah. Thanks, everybody, and thanks, panelists. You guys are great.
We'll see you all tomorrow morning.